When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
This is lifemint.com, and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. The first story we discuss is what are the main takeaways from the assembly elections. The results, as we all know now, especially that of Uttar Pradesh, have firmly established the BJP under Narendra Modi and Amit Shah as India's preeminent political party. It's also seen its graph rising in Northeast. What is your take on this?
I think everyone's had a surfeit of takeaways, right? I mean, considering the fact that we live in a world where everyone wants to offer instant opinion, we've had 5 takeaways, 7 takeaways, 10 takeaways, 12 takeaways, and 23 takeaways. 23, I'm told, is the magic number when it comes to the internet. But I think I just have a couple of observations. The first one is the fact that I think brand Modi is extremely strong now. This election victory has established him as the strongest political brand that we've had in this country for a long, long, long time. And there are parallels already being drawn with Indira Gandhi at her prime, and I think it is not out of place to do that. And in some ways, just like Indira Gandhi at her peak was a singular brand to the exclusion of all other brands in the Congress, I think Modi is a singular brand to the exclusion of all other brands in the BJP. Except that at least he himself talks a different language. The people around him talk a different language. They're trying to make it seem more broad-based, which the Congress and Indira Gandhi never did. But despite that, I think he is the singular brand in that party. With him, the party will obviously, I mean, they've clearly proved that they can win anything. So that's the first observation that I have. The second one I have is something that our colleague Anil Padmanabhan has written about, which is the fact that considering that this was effectively a referendum on demonetization, especially Uttar Pradesh, I'm sure people may give some various excuses and all that, but it was just that. And the people have said, okay, we are with you. I think it will increase his propensity to take risks. People who know him well and people who have interacted with him well, and there are not too many of these people, say that he's always been a risk taker. Maybe we will see more of those. I don't know what. But it could be labor reform, it could be land reform. The Benami Act, Properties Act is already in place. I'm sure they will go majorly after that, which will worry a lot of people, right? I mean, in Bombay, many of these slightly grayish area things are in stocks and shares. In Delhi, it's all in real estate. Right. I'm hoping that they do. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. The third thing, which is my last observation on this, is really the opposition, right? Everyone, it is natural to look for a counterforce. But I think increasingly people are clutching at straws. Because at this point in time, there is no indication of who the counterforce could be. So at one point in time, Kejriwal was propped up. And I'm saying propped up not in a negative way, but propped up because a lot of people believed that he could be that. So he was propped up as sort of counterweight. He's flopped majorly. Although I don't know what is likely to happen in Delhi when the elections next happen. Maybe they'll retain. But he has flopped in Punjab and he has flopped in Goa. And all this whinging about fraudulent frauds in EVMs is a little weird. So I don't want to go down that road. I mean, it harks of being extremely poor losers because these are the same people who would have said nothing that they want. But the question is, who is likely to be that counterforce? Who is likely to be that person? Because it is clear that that person cannot be Rahul Gandhi. And I don't know why the Congress party is continuing with this belief, because it is now clear that it can't be him. It is clear that it can't be Arvind Kejriwal. It's clear that it can't be Akhilesh Yadav, because, I mean, had he won this election, maybe. And at least people would have continued to prop him up. But right, considering the fact that he's lost, and badly. So I don't know, maybe it could be Nitish Kumar. I don't believe it can be, but I'm sure there'll be lots of people who are happy to prop him up. And again, you know, the parallels with Indira Gandhi are so clear, because back then there was, and one of our psycho fans coined the slogan which said Indira is India and India is Indira, and you can pretty much say the same thing for Modi now, right? And without him, the BJP would probably not be as potent a force. But then that is what leaders are all about, right? That's what they're supposed to do.
The next story we discuss is what the US Fed rate hike means for the Sensex and for the rupee. On Wednesday night, the Fed has hiked the rates by 25 basis points as expected. And Janet Yellen has also said that the future rate hikes would be gradual.
Well, we've seen what it's meant. There's been some strengthening, at least in the rupee. I'm not so sure that it is based on any fundamentals because this appreciation of the rupee was entirely unexpected. Maybe it will go back a little bit because the rupee is the only Asian currency to gain this year. Everyone else has lost. The Fed's action was expected. I think the stock markets factored that in. And I'm not sure that it is going to cause any fundamental disruption in the stock market. I am a little worried at how the stock markets have been running. Because if you look at 2017-18 price earnings multiples, it does look a little expensive. Are we in bubble territory yet? Some people say so. I'm not so convinced. But I do think the valuations are beginning to look a little expensive. But then stock markets are creatures of sentiment. The sentiment right now is positive. Yeah. I also think that if you really look at it from the long-term perspective, if you look at things from a 10-year perspective or a 15-year perspective, I can't see too many other options than India for anyone who wants to invest. I mean, the market is huge. It is a large economy. It is a democracy. And there is going to be political stability now till at least 2024, right? Because it is a given now that Modi will win the 2019 elections. And these are things that investors look for. So I'm not surprised. But I think at some point in time, you will have to start seeing corporate earnings look up. If things are so good, they have to start reflecting in corporate earnings at some point in time. Until then, it will look a little expensive and people like me will continue to be just a little cynical about that.
Okay. Moving on, the next story we discuss is about the Goods and Services Council, which on Thursday has given its nod to the two remaining pieces of supporting legislation for implementing the landmark tax reform. And this is actually critical to meeting the deadline of the 1st July for the GST implementation. So what do you think of this?
I just have two observations on this. The first one, of course, is about time because we've said we will implement it from 1st July. Even a watered-down GST is better than no GST at all because, let's be honest, what we are getting is a watered-down GST. But now that there is some kind of consensus on how they should go about this, and there's some consensus on the laws and the rates and everything else, and there are enabling provisions on some of the rates that have been decided on, I think it's a good move. I think it's even better that some of the cesses that they had for luxury and sin products are not as excessive as one thought they would be. Why do we need them? I mean, the free market perspective would say, like, why do we even need them? Which I agree with because that our house view is always a free market view. But at the end of the day, one has to be pragmatic about it. The states have to be got on board. Are companies ready for it is the next big question. I'm not so sure that they are for a 1st July rollout. If they're not, this could prove to be a short-term disruptor. And, you know, we don't like short-term disruptors. Like demonetization, long-term impacts unclear. We've always maintained that short-term disruptor, we seem to have put it behind us now. For it to not be a short-term disruptor, I think lots of planning needs to go into place. Long term, it is something that can significantly add to the domestic economy. It could add, I mean, at one point in time when everyone was speaking about a very pure GST, if I may use that word, people said it could, 2 percentage points it could add to the Indian GDP. I'm not so sure that in its watered-down version it could, but anything between a 0.75 and a 1.25 percentage point addition to GDP is possible. I think that's good.
Finally, we end with this story on the motorcycle market, where Honda is all set to make a middleweight motorcycle in India to take on Royal Enfield, which has a cult following in India.
Not just in India. It's slowly expanded its following to other parts of the world. I remember this was what, a couple of years ago, I had layover in Chicago, right? So I obviously didn't want to go into town because I had to catch a flight. So I was staying at one of the airport hotels, and the airport hotels obviously are extremely cheap airport hotels, right? Because Chicago is a hub, and I was staying at it, and as it turned out, there was a sort of an Enfield convention, or Enfield owners convention that was happening. So there were these spare parts guys hanging around and everything else, and I asked them, and they said it's reasonably popular. It's not hugely popular because there's the middle segment, bikes between 350cc and 600cc, whatever, and no one else really makes because all the Harleys are like above 750cc, they're big. And so Enfield has a cult following, not just in India, but also there. Honda has got its approach right because they're not trying to manufacture it anywhere else. They're going to manufacture it in India. In India itself, the Enfield does well. It has been immune to the, volatility that this that bike sales have seen, especially after demonetization. But anyway, that's also because especially no one in the rural market, some people, but not too many people are going to buy because it's I think our story put it brilliantly, right? I mean, globally, the auto market is largely in its extremes. You either have the popular segment where you have the 100, 125, maybe 150cc bikes, or you have the 750cc plus, 1000cc plus Harleys, which are these mean, big hogs and that everyone rides. And Enfield's got a lovely middle. So it's a cult bike in India where the big bikes are really too expensive and maybe not good enough for Indian roads. Although you won't believe it if you see what's happening in Gurgaon and Noida early mornings on weekends when everyone keeps gunning their bikes and going up and down. But I think it's a good segment. They're going to manufacture in India, which will make it cost effective. They'll obviously compete with, they'll have to compete with Royal Enfield. And it's going to be a different segment, right? It's not the Triumph segment. It's not the Harley segment. It is actually the Royal Enfield segment. So their bikes will also be priced probably the same as Royal Enfield. Right. It'll be interesting to see what they come up with. Honda is a good bike company, then so is Eicher. And they've really improved the Royal Enfield, right? I mean, they've moved it from where it was, poor tech, not good ride quality, to much better tech, much better ride quality. It's not a low-tech wonder. It's actually there's a reason why so many people are buying it now. And Honda hasn't done particularly well since their split, right? I mean, Hero has done well since the split. I don't think Honda has done particularly well since the split.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.